Hello there. Today is Tuesday, July 25th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump's son-in-law denies collusion with Moscow.
And I have been fully transparent in providing all requested information.
Will Republicans cave under pressure from the president on health care?
There's been enough talk and no action. Now is the time for action.
The latest on a tragic and deadly human smuggling case. Also ahead, a movie making a big impact in its opening weekend in the U.S. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, Jared Kushner, President Donald Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor, denied Monday that he or anyone else with the Trump campaign had any improper contacts with Russia leading up to or after the 2016 election. After a nearly two-hour meeting with a Senate committee investigating, Kushner made a brief statement to reporters.
Let me be very clear. I did not collude with Russia, nor do I know of anyone else in the campaign who did so.
The congressional committees are expected to seek information about Kushner's June 2016 meeting with a Russian attorney who said she could provide incriminating material about Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. Kushner argued that the investigation implies Donald Trump didn't win the election fairly.
Donald Trump had a better message and ran a smarter campaign, and that is why he won. Suggesting otherwise ridicules those who voted for him.
In a written statement issued before his appearance on Capitol Hill, Kushner confirmed that he, the younger Trump, and Paul Manafort met with a Russian lawyer and other figures tied to Moscow last June, but asserted he arrived late to the meeting and heard no discussions of the presidential campaign. That meeting has become a focal point for numerous investigations into Russian interference into the 2016 election aimed at helping Trump win. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The U.S. will conduct another test of a missile defense system. Chinese jets intercepted a U.S. military plane over the East China Sea. Hijab goes mainstream as advertisers target Muslim money. Mexican drug cartel leader is receiving 30 years in a U.S. prison. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump is ramping up pressure on Republicans to pass a new health care law, saying there has been enough talk and no action.
Tomorrow, the Senate will vote on whether to allow this urgently needed bill to come to the Senate floor for debate. The question for every senator, Democrat or Republican, is whether they will side with Obamacare's architects, which have been so destructive to our country, or with its forgotten victims.
Speaking in the White House Blue Room Monday, he scolded Senate Republicans.
Any senator who votes against starting debate is telling America that you are fine with the Obamacare nightmare, which is what it is.
The Senate is headed toward crucial votes on whether to repeal the seven-year-old law, which national surveys show Americans view more favorably than Republican proposals to replace it. A makeshift memorial for 10 immigrants who died after being inside a sweltering tractor trailer in Texas includes a few unopened bottles of water. The bottles sit next to a tree outside the Walmart in San Antonio, Texas, where dozens of migrants were discovered Sunday packed inside that tractor trailer. One surviving passenger has told the Associated Press he heard people crying and asking for water. Many of the victims were from Mexico, according to Mexican Consul General Reina Torres Mendeville.
We have contacted and we're in the process of contacting their families and making sure that they can visit their relatives or figure out a way in which they can have permanent contact with them.
The driver, James Matthew Bradley Jr., now faces a federal human smuggling charge that carries the possibility of the death penalty. The Walmart spokeswoman says a store employee called 911 upon learning there was an emergency and others gave tractor-trailer passengers ice and water. Since the news of the tragedy broke, we've been hearing the words human trafficking and human smuggling. Joining me now to understand the difference is Reverend Nell Green, strategist for the group Coalition to Combat Human Trafficking Texas. So what is the difference between human smuggling and human trafficking?
This is one of the biggest questions that I go through, especially in Texas and the work that we're doing on the border. For legal purposes, if you have paid somebody to get you across the border with the intent that you're going to go to work somewhere, and you get caught on the other side of the border, whether it's in a stash house or a trailer or whatever, at this point, you have been smuggled. And for legal purposes and for charges to be brought against anybody, in order for it to be human trafficking, you've got to be able to prove force, fraud, or coercion. And you can't do that in this case.
Mm.
Now, while people may be victims of, say, rape or whatever, they're victims, but they're not victims of human trafficking. And ICE and Border Patrol, FBI, et cetera, they're all very clear. At this point, legally, it's defined as smuggling, and you essentially are deported. Now, what they do realize, and yet it muddies the waters legally, is that there is an inextricable link between smuggling and trafficking. And I've just got dozens of stories that I can tell you, but let me generalize it this way.
Okay.
You pay somebody to get you across.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're going across to get work.
Right.
Maybe your smuggler is a part of a group that says, we're going to get you work. You get on the other side, and once you get out of that stash house or that truck and you're sent to your job, that's where the trafficking begins. You owe me more money for your passage. You owe me for your food. You owe me for your incidentals. If you don't pay me, I know where your family is, and I'm going to kill them. One man I know, they called his sister in New York and said, if you don't give us another $10,000, we're going to behead your brother. That's the point that it becomes trafficking. But by that point, you're past the smuggling point.
Mm-hmm.
And legally, it's in a different entity, but you're lost in the system. Women who thought they were coming to work in a restaurant find themselves forced into the sex industry, forced into serving beers and cantinas, et cetera, as cantineras, and forced to drink and keep up with the people who are there. Terrible things, but you're past the smuggling point. At that point, you're lost in the maze of trafficking, and finding you and getting you help is very difficult.
What do you think happened here?
This would be pure speculation based on what I've seen. So on the border, particularly in Laredo, you would be shocked at the hundreds and thousands of trucks that pass through that point. Of course, there's people in some of them from Central America and from Mexico. But what people don't know is they also are from other countries, because other countries have realized not that easy to just get somebody in through a shipping channel or in through an international airport. So they're bringing them into Central America and Mexico, and they're crossing them using coyotes and smugglers and trucks, etc. So it's become a major way to transport people here into the United States.
This particular case, you think these people likely paid to get over, but then why were they left in the back of this truck to die?
And this is pure speculation,
because
I don't know anything about this particular case. What most of these people don't realize is that these folks are part of a trafficking ring.
The truck drivers?
Oh, yeah. They're part of a whole chain. You've got a chain. You've got somebody who recruits you to go to work. You're looking for work. They recruit you. They connect you with somebody that's going to get you passage. That person gets you passage to the border. Then at the border, you may have actually, they even know how you do it. You start out on a bus, then you get on a train, then you get in a taxi. I mean, it's a well-oiled machine. Then you get to the border, then you've got your coyote, then you either get put on a truck or you get crossed some other way. You're a pure commodity. That's all. Okay, they lose a few bodies. Hmm. It's like losing a few pounds of rice. They don't care about these people as humanity. It's a commodity, and they lost some money. That's it. It's all about the money. Let me tell you this one story. A school teacher in Houston, a student, she was teaching English as a second language, and a student asked her, teacher, do you know what a coyote is? And she goes, yeah, it looks like a dog, but it's wild. And he goes, no, teacher, a coyote is a person. My uncle is a coyote. We go into Mexico. We load people up into his truck. We bring them to San Antonio, and we put them in my grandmother's garage. Oh. It's pure business. Also, what has happened now, especially since the 80s, the cartels have gotten very involved in this. Notoriously do not care about human life. So this truck driver is just moving a commodity, and he's not thinking in terms of humanity.
So, in other words, even if it's not trafficking, if it's smuggling, it's likely related to the trafficking.
More and more every day, we are finding an inextricable link between smuggling and trafficking. The University of Texas just came out with some very startling statistics regarding trafficking in the state of Texas. And it is estimated that in the state of Texas, there are 313,000 victims of human trafficking. While most agencies really have a strong focus on sex trafficking, what is amazing about these statistics, and one of the reasons we've become so involved in the border and addressing it on the border, is because of those 313,000, 234,000 are victims of labor trafficking, not sex trafficking. And they estimate that $6.6 billion a year is made in the state of Texas off of labor trafficking victims. It is a huge problem, and it is inextricably linked to smuggling across the border. But legally, how to define it? Also, at this point, I know interviews are going on now, right? That was even in some of the articles that they're going to start interviewing some of these people. Right now, they don't identify themselves as victims, maybe victims of death, mistreatment, etc., but they do not identify themselves as victims at this point of human trafficking. And so legally, you can't prosecute for human trafficking.
All right, that's Reverend Nell Green, strategist with Coalition to Combat Human Trafficking Texas. Thanks for being with us. Well, Israel began removing metal detectors from entrances to a major Jerusalem shrine early Tuesday morning to defuse a crisis over the site that angered the Muslim world and triggered some of the worst Israeli-Palestinian clashes in years. The crisis had been triggered by a shooting Sunday in which an Israeli embassy guard killed two Jordanians after one attacked him with a screwdriver. Jordan initially said the guard could only leave after an investigation, while Israel said he enjoyed diplomatic immunity. Randolph-Macon College analyst Michael Fishbach tells VOA's Victor Beatty that Muslims view the heightened security measures as violating the delicate and longstanding status quo.
The worst-case scenario is that we could be heading toward a third Palestinian intifada. And that's something that disturbs a lot of people on various sides because it inevitably would lead to bloodshed on both sides.
Isn't Israel justified following the killing of those two policemen to try to ban weapons from entering this temple complex?
Well, the Israeli government has said that it is routine for houses of worship around the world to have metal detectors. Of course, everything in the Israel-Palestinian context depends on history. Literally, as far back as the Ottomans, there have been what are called status quo laws that have dealt with how different religious sects and different nationalities deal with, share, use certain houses of worship in what is today Israel and the West Bank and Gaza. And certainly in the case of this particular sacred area, Palestinians claim that putting any kind of bar or hindrance upon worshipers represents a change in the status quo. Israel has said, well, of course, this is a security measure following up on the attack that killed two Israeli border police. And I think many Americans forget that East Jerusalem is occupied territory under international law.
UN Security Council considers this an urgent matter enough to meet on Monday to seek ways to calm the situation.
You know, there is issues related to the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. There are relations between Israel and Jordan, Jordan having a historic and indeed a legal role in the holy places, the Islamic holy places there for the United States. This is of concern because so much else is going on in the Middle East, and there is a trickle-over effect that this could trigger into something much wider. So I can well see why the UN Security Council wants to meet to discuss this.
Do you see any way out of this for both sides?
The Israeli press has reported that the Israeli government is particularly concerned, although the army and the Internal Security Service had recommended several days ago that these metal detectors be removed. However, in light of what's happened, the Netanyahu government is anxious not to appear that it is caving in to the Palestinian street and removing these.
The crisis was resolved, though, after a phone call late Monday between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Jordan's King Abdullah II. Media reports had said the deal could see the embassy security guard released in exchange for the removal of the metal detectors. The 37-acre walled compound in Jerusalem is the third holiest site of Islam after Mecca and Medina in Saudi Arabia. And it's also the holiest site of Judaism, revered as the place where biblical temples once stood. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA's International Edition continues now as we turn to what's trending on social media. We are joined by Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what are we talking about today?
Starting with a program that has been included with every version of Microsoft since it first came out in 1985 on hundreds of millions of computers around the world, if not more, beloved and used by people all over the world. I'm talking, of course, about Microsoft Paint, one of those applications that Microsoft, everybody uses it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Microsoft has announced today that they are depreciating it, which means phasing it out. With their new operating system, Windows 10. Apparently, they're phasing it out because there are newer programs and they feel like this is an old kind of legacy program. But as soon as they made this announcement, people were upset. This is something that people have used a lot over the years for a lot of different things. For many people, they said it was their first computer kind of art program or art project, a way to create their own masterpieces without having actual paint or brushes or canvas or anything like that. One thing that a lot of kids have done in the past before the advent of smartphones and apps and games and things is they take the paint program and they go in and draw just random lines and then fill them in, kind of making a stained glass kind of thing. And we saw a lot of those pictures on social media today, people saying, this is our first art project, the first thing that we worked on a computer, first kind of game before there were games on the computer. But as much as there's a nostalgia factor and people loving paint because they can make fun little drawings, many people say that they're still using it as a quick way to take screenshots. So from a practical standpoint, people are also disappointed to see that it's going away. Now, what remains to be seen is that if this public outcry causes Microsoft to change their mind and keep paint in Windows 10. I don't know that they anticipated that this will become a trending topic around the world as people said, oh, I love MS Paint. You can't take it away. It's a program that we've had for so long.
All right. Well, is there anything else exciting going on?
Yes. Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage, always a fun person that gets mentioned a lot on the internet and talked about and used in memes and things. And this weekend was no different. He was visiting Kazakhstan for the 13th Eurasia International Film Festival. And while he was there, he posed with Kazakhstan's first lady while he was wearing traditional Kazakh garb, a bearskin fur kind of hat, an embellished robe with a fur trim collar. And he's sporting this look on his face in this one picture. Some say it's bewildered. Some say he looks miserable. Others have gone as far to say he looks dead inside in this one picture. Well, this picture of Nicolas Cage with the First Lady of Kazakhstan has gone viral and turned into an internet meme. He's now been photoshopped into everything from UN meetings to Siberian winter scenes to 19th century paintings because he looks very traditional and kind of very old school in this outfit. People joking that there's so much talk about Russia in the news. It's even impacted Nicolas Cage because, of course, the Kazakh garb is very similar to that of Russia, and they share quite a large border there. So he has been photoshopped into everything. It's not the first time that Nicolas Cage has become a meme on the internet. He's one of those actors that people on social media in particular have just embraced. And if you put him in a traditional outfit, then it practically writes itself. The tweets write themselves. The posts write themselves.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of anthropologists exploring a cave system in South Africa has found the fossilized remains of a new modern human ancestor. The scientists say it's possible that the new hominin species may have even lived along with the earliest modern humans and probably other hominin species over 200,000 years ago. The newfound relative species is called Homo naledi. Anthropologist and research team leader John Hawks from the University of Wisconsin says that the discovery included the remains of three juvenile and adults and includes a complete skull. Finding the gathering of remains leads Hawks to think that the Homo naledi used large remote places to store its dead. This behavior, he says, is something that suggests great intelligence and possibly the first stirrings of culture. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, it's victory for Dunkirk in U.S. theaters for its opening weekend. Christopher Nolan's World War II epic brought in an estimated $50.5 million to easily top the box office. Joining me now to talk more about the film is Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Hey, Jeff, so tell us about the movie.
Well, you know, I'm a big history buff, especially World War II, and I knew of the Battle of Dunkirk, but I wasn't totally sure what happened because it was a full year before America entered the war. It was in May of 1940, and what happened was the Germans had taken the French town of Dunkirk and pushed Allied soldiers to literally the beach, right up along the beach shore, front shore, and you had 400,000 British troops, French troops, and Dutch troops, and they were literally stranded on this beach, and Churchill could not send his destroyers or his planes to defend them or to rescue them because they had just taken such a beating. And the Battle of Britain was not too far off in the distance. So if they didn't have the support they needed, I think the historians say the war would have gone completely different. Hitler would have ran right into England, taken over Europe, and we'd had a very different situation. So now with Dunkirk, you had all these soldiers stranded, and Churchill said we need to get at least 30 or 40,000 to help replenish our national army. But the problem is, how are you going to get them off this beach? So what they did was they enlisted civilian boats. So the big story is that the soldiers could look across and see their homeland, but no one was coming for them. All of a sudden, every kind of yacht, every kind mm-hmm. of sailboat, every kind of dinghy, I even read that someone in a rowboat, you know, went 26 miles across, and they started rescuing these soldiers. Now, what Christopher Nolan has done, he made this movie almost like an experimental film because we don't have a main character that we follow through like a Saving Private Ryan or a Hacksaw Ridge. We use the stories of three different situations that are going on in the air, on the sea, and on land. So it's almost kind of like a visceral experience. So we're dropped into these battles. We're dropped into this tension that we feel the entire movie and the urgency because they're trying to stop the Germans from bombing them on the beach because they were literally sitting ducks. And he uses all real scale effects. So you see the thousands of extras. You see real Spitfire planes. You see the most ships used in any movie, up to like 60 ships coming from the English Channel. So there's such a realism in this movie that is just unparalleled. And not only that, he uses film. He's not a digital guy at all. He's one of the few filmmakers that shot the movie in 70mm IMAX.
What's the difference in the viewing?
Well, it's because 70mm IMAX, and if you've seen a movie in IMAX format, mm-hmm. it's like 15 to 20 times larger than the average film frame. So you see this giant projection of film that gives it a warmth and a realism that digital doesn't kind of capture. And there's only a handful of theaters across the country, so make sure you check your local listings, where they're actually outfitted a screen with the projector to see it in 70mm. And 70mm was also used like in Lawrence of Arabia, and also Quentin Tarantino used it for Hateful Eight. He broke out the cameras and did that. So this is a big hit in the box office right now. And it's got a great cast. It's got even Kenneth Branagh and also Mark Rylance, who won the Oscar for Bridge of Spies, and also stars, get this, Harry Styles from One Direction,
wow.
The boy band.
That's cool. Is he singing or just acting?
No, acting. He's acting, and he is phenomenal in it. And Chris Nolan said he auditioned hundreds of guys, and he had what it takes, and he did. He can express terror. He can express I'm very impressed with this kid. I really am. So he's got a great future in acting. So this is one of the breakout hits of the summer. It's made a fortune worldwide. It's opening weekend, and it's already being touted as, you know, the best picture of the year so far. Definitely going to be remembered to come around Oscar time and award season.
Wow, I was just going to ask you, what do you think it's going to be an award contender? So,
oh, absolutely, yeah. I think Christopher Nolan has got, and also a story. It's not really a war movie. It's about an escape. It's an escape movie, and that's what makes it exciting. And also, every fresh kid you see on screen was the age that most of the soldiers were at that time. So you see freckled-faced kids standing on the beach worrying about how they're going to get home, and they're sitting ducks on this beach. And so you just feel this tension, you feel the heroism, and it's just an amazing experience. I know people have seen it more than two or three times already just in its opening weekend.
Quite an endorsement, Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at VOAnews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned over the recent violations of the ceasefire in the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, which have resulted in multiple reported civilian and military casualties, including a young child. In a statement issued July 6th, the State Department called on both sides to cease military action and return to the negotiation table. In their statement released July 5th, the co-chairs of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe Minsk Group called upon the parties to cease military action as violence only begets further violence and accomplishes nothing. The co-chairs called upon the sides to return to the negotiation table in good faith. In an earlier June 19th statement, the co-chairs underscored that such negotiations are the only way to bring a lasting peace to the people of the region, who expect and deserve progress toward settlement of the conflict. Stefan Dujarric, the United Nations spokesman for the Secretary General, stated on July 6th that the UN also shares the concerns of the OSCE Minsk Group co-chairs over recent ceasefire regime violations. We, the UN, call upon the sides to refrain from any military action and strongly urge them to take immediate steps to de-escalate tensions and prevent further violence. An early return to the negotiation table in good faith is the only way to resolve this long-standing and dangerous conflict, Mr. Dujarric said. For its part, the United States continues to engage intensely with the sides. The long-standing policy of the United States, shared by the Minsk Group co-chairs, is that a just settlement must be based on international law, which includes the Helsinki Final Act, in particular, the principles of the non-use of force or threat of force, territorial integrity, and equal rights and self-determination of peoples.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.